If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Well, today I'm thrilled to introduce an incredible guest. Her name is Lauren Collins. She is the brilliant staff writer at The New Yorker who has just released a much-watched docuseries. It's called Killer Lies, Chasing a True Crime Con Man. If you're a true crime fan, you're going to love this, okay? This gripping series takes viewers deep into the life and deceit of one of the most audacious con men in recent history. Lauren first told this shocking story in her meticulously researched article, Murder, He Wrote. But now in Killer Lies, she uncovers even more layers of deception and betrayal. Through her signature blend of investigative depth and storytelling finesse, Lauren takes viewers on a jaw-dropping journey into the world of manipulation, uncovering how this con man orchestrated his scams and preyed on some of the most vulnerable people. Killer Lies isn't just about the crimes, it's about the psychology behind the deception and how far some are willing to go to maintain their fabricated reality. I'm excited to dive into how Lauren brought this unbelievable story to the screen and what it was like chasing down the truth behind these lies. Welcome, Lauren Collins. Lauren Collins, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood. How are you?
I'm great. I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So I'm so excited about this program. I watched it. I had a special screener. I think it's fantastic. It's so good. But I want to, let people know about this because this is a name I had never heard before. First of all, this is based on a New Yorker article you wrote called Murder, He Wrote in 2022. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you came upon Stephane Bourgoin? Am I pronouncing his name right?
You are. You can go with a little more Stephane if you want, but
perfect pronunciation.
So I'm the New Yorker's correspondent in France. And this is a story that took place in France. Bourgoin was the, premier expert on serial killers in France. He had had this like decades long career. Every time you turned on the television, he was there. Every time there was a crime, he was the one, the go-to guy who was gonna, analyze it. And what's really interesting is he managed to position himself like at the juncture of not only media, but also law enforcement. He was like training police officers, consulting on all these cases and social networks. He had this rabid fan base. So anyway, what happened is he, established himself as this expert. And if you decide to devote your life to serial killers, the first question anybody's going to ask you is why? And he had this easy, you know, this ready answer. Every time someone asked that question, he would say, because my wife was murdered by one in Los Angeles in 1976. Anyway, flash forward several decades, and a collective of anonymous fans came together, realized there was something totally off with his story, and, like, you know, launched their own investigation and brought him down. So this story was, you know, really well known in France. It was causing a lot of headlines. It was like in Perry Match and, you know, kind of the equivalent of People magazine. But I read about it in the paper, and I just thought, I feel like I have so many more questions. There's so much more I want to know. So that was, that was really how I came to it initially.
And what's your background in general? Were you working with the New Yorker on other true crime stuff?
No, I mean, I'm not a true crime specialist, but these stories, I think, I mean, it's interesting. True crime is an interesting descriptor, I think. There's kind of this false premise that, like, true crime is a new obsession. But, you know, I have a colleague, Sarah Weinman, who appears in the series, and she makes the point, she is an expert on true crime, but, you know, this is the Bible. This is Shakespeare. It's the Victorian obsession with Jack the Ripper. These are primordial, these are, you know, primal stories about human beings, about human behavior in extremists. And so, yeah, I'm drawn to them in the sense that I want, you know, the Bourgoin story is interesting because it had this kind of quantitative layer, you know, who, where, and when, but also this qualitative layer on top of it that I really wanted to get into, which was how and why.
Right. Right. So, all right. So for people listening who probably have not heard about him yet, what was fascinating from watching this is that what unfolds is, here is a guy who is kind of seen as an expert. He's on TV all the time. He has such credibility because, number one, his girlfriend or friend or wife, I saw it was mentioned a couple of times and referred to as a different type of woman to him. But anyway, that she was killed by a serial killer in America. So he had that, like you said. He also had written all sorts of books. And then he proclaimed he had met in person with up to 77 different serial killers in prison. And then this group called the Fourth Eye, am I getting this right, came out and said, this doesn't seem right. Something seems odd. I'm reading different books where he's saying the exact same thing that other people said. And then he's impersonating different criminal profilers, or is that what they're called? Criminal profiles?
Yeah.
And he's impersonating them and or taking their words and making them his own. So what I thought was fascinating that these people that are just like online sleuths, they started as fans, but then they started to realize that there was something more to it and started to, did they question him? I mean, I'm not that far into it yet. So talk about the downfall. What started to be the crack besides this group, you know, saying this looks odd, but was there something that where he started to make some mistakes?
Well, what's so interesting about this story is usually the longer a con goes on, the harder it is to maintain, right? Yeah, like you've told the story too many times, you start telling it in different versions, people catch on. Bourgoin's con was especially, I mean, it's just almost unique because the longer he did it, the solider it became. He interviewed, I mean, he didn't interview 77 serial killers. That's what he always said, but it was a lie. But he did get in jailhouses and interview some serial killers. And from them, he got master classes in manipulation. I mean, he learned from, you know, some of the most kind of unrepentant, you know, liars how to do it. And over the years, like he, by saying that he was this expert, he actually became the thing that he said he was, which he blagged his way into becoming an expert on serial killers. So with the fans, I mean, it's really interesting. These are people who, you know, one's a dispatcher, one's a nurse. They work, and in their spare time, they're passionate about true crime. And so what happened was one day, you know, they were kind of all on Facebook and in a group that in a true crime group. And somebody pointed out that one of Bourgoin's anecdotes was kind of fishy, you know, that he had told it different ways, different times, that it didn't all add up. And anyway, posted just saying like, this guy, like something smells, you know, off to me. And a few other people chimed in, and eventually they went offline and kind of like, you know, took it to WhatsApp and started really getting into it. But they initially thought they were investigating what was effectively a literary crime. You know, they thought it was plagiarism. They called him ultimately like a voleur de vie in French. It's a life thief. And he was kind of this like magpie who would go and pick up the shiny bits of other people's lives and then try to pass them off as his own. But that was what they thought they were doing. They were really like going through books and just comparing passages. But the deeper they went, they started to figure out that this entire career was built on a really shaky foundation. And I have to say, like somebody asked me recently as a professional journalist, you know, what do you make of this kind of interaction between professional journalists and amateur sleuths? And I was like, you know, if the quality of the information is good, I don't care if the person who came up with it has a press card. And so they published this expose, and my, you know, when I came into the story, when I started my reporting, I was kind of building off of that. There were some unanswered questions that I wanted to get into, but I re-verified everything. And I just want to take my hat off to them because the quality of their work was really good.
Yeah. Right. How did his fraudulent claims impact the true crime community, both in France and internationally, do you think? I mean, was there a moment where people are like, wait a minute, we need to rethink a lot of the stuff we've been reading?
I think it's been a moment of reckoning because, like I said, he did this really savvy thing, this really opportunistic thing, which was he kind of played every role in the true crime repertoire. He, you know, positioned himself as the loved one of a victim. So he played on this kind of currency of victimhood. He was an investigator. He was training law enforcement. He was a member of the media. And ultimately, he was a perpetrator. I mean, not of a, you know, not of a crime that you go to jail for, but of he took people's stories, real victims and survivors of crimes, and he exploited them and he profited from them and he passed them off as his own in some cases. I looked at this and I see it as kind of the perfect way in to some of these questions about true crime as an industry, as a genre, as a form of storytelling. It's a true crime story about true crime.
Yeah.
And that was what drew me to it.
And that's what becomes so fascinating in watching this too. I was curious watching it because there's a moment where he talks about how he was given the remains of one of the serial killers. And when people write to him, he says he could give different parts of the remains. And then it ends up being that that's completely a complete lie. So I wondered how have the victims' families reacted to the revelation of his lies, especially considering some of them became really close to him and trusted him.
Yeah, there we wanted to make sure, you know, I think you could initially look at this and think it was a victimless crime. I mean, it was a guy telling lies. There's no body in this story. But you know, it wasn't a victimless crime. I mean, there's a woman named Dahina C who is in our series and has a lot of really interesting things to say, but she survived. She was raped at the age of 14 by a man named Michel Fourniret, who went on to become a notorious serial killer in France. And she got to know Bourgoin through his work with a victims and families of victims association. And she confided in him. And, you know, I don't want to spoil too much of what she says in our series, but we were very, very intent on, you know, centering her experience. She had a lot of things to say about it. We wanted her to be able to speak to the pain that his actions had caused her. I think the series, I think what's unique about it is it's been an opportunity for us to take a 360 look at this industry and at this form of storytelling. And that includes us. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes we really wanted to do this out of respect for the audience and for their passion and engagement and their savvy. I mean, often you get kind of a 350 look and there's this suspicious lack of we interrogate ourselves. We ask ourselves questions about our motives, about our role in this process. And I think that's something that makes this, you know, interesting and yeah, it is, I hope, will be a part of evolving the genre.
This episode is brought to you by Holistic Goddess. Holistic Goddess has been such a trusted resource for me on my health journey. One product I really wanted to highlight is their Holistic Menopause Support by PhD Health. It's been a game changer for me during perimenopause, and here's why I love it. It eases discomfort. It really helps with hot flashes and mood swings. It boosts focus. The ingredients in it, including creatine, support mental sharpness. I feel more focused and clear-headed, which is so important for my busy days. It nurtures comfort. It gently addresses vaginal dryness with black cohosh. It's comforting to have that support during this time. It has natural ingredients. I love that it uses these ingredients like sage and rhubarb extract. If you're going through similar changes like perimenopause and menopause, I highly recommend giving this a try. It's been a relief for me, and I think it could help you too. Go to holisticgoddess.com and use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Again, that's holisticgoddess.com for 15% off using code UNDERSTOOD.
Where is he now?
He is in France. He is, you know, he appears in our series. We had a lot of questions that we wanted to put to him, and I got the chance to do that, which, you know, I think you said you're watching episode 3. So
yeah, I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Okay,
so he has an opinion on your take of everything. He has an opinion on why he did this, and he gives an excuse, I'm assuming, correct?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yay. Okay. But he's not in prison. He didn't.
No. I mean, he wouldn't be, you know,
okay, so there was no actual crime.
No, there was no crime, and he's never been charged with anything, and there's never been a question of him going to prison. But the quest, the kind of like ongoing quest for the fourth eye, you know, these are people who say, they're like, we want to just go back to our lives and our jobs, but we can't, all we want is for him to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. And so in episode 3, you know, this is kind of where the quest for truth converges with, you know, someone who has every reason to keep his self-serving story going as long as possible.
Right. Okay. So I'm curious now, as a journalist, you know, you find this topic that you're really interested in, you have more questions, and you start to write about it. Were there things... Two-part questions. Were there things in writing about it for The New Yorker, and then things once you were doing it for TV that you were either hitting a lot of walls or you were uncovering things that you were like, oh my God, wait, nobody's talking about this. This is more to the story. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, there is a really specific one. This was the question of, so every time he talked about his, you know, putatively murdered wife, he would hold up one photograph, right, that he kind of like brandished as his, you know, proof. And it was this beautifully composed black and white photograph of a young couple kind of staring at each other, love struck, smitten, looking into each other's eyes, their noses almost touching. And it looked like it was, I mean, I always thought it was probably from the 70s, just from their haircuts, from the clothes they were wearing. You know, I didn't have very many clues to go on. Right. So I thought it was probably from the 70s. I thought it might have been taken on a film set because he had worked on some adult movies and B movies. And it just like it looked like it was taken with a good camera and the way it was composed. Mm-hmm. But I really had very little to go on. And so I called everyone I could find. I spent hours watching, you know, erotic films from the 1970s, like pausing every time there was an open mouth, pausing the screen to try to find see if the actress had a snaggletooth like the one in the picture. And I mean, nothing. Like, I just could not crack the case of who the woman in this photograph was. And I thought it was really important because, you know, he didn't have a wife who was murdered, but this was a real person with a real face whose image had been like stolen and exploited. And he'd projected all these gruesome, violent fantasies upon it.
Right. Like catfishing somewhat.
Yeah. And so I thought, like, does this woman know that she's been trotted around town as a murder victim for decades? If she does, how does she feel about it? Who is she? Where is she? And I couldn't I couldn't figure it out with my means, both in terms of time, and I was working by myself. So once we got into the series and, you know, working with Ben Selko, the director, and our amazing team of researchers and producers, that was a question that I was like really, really intent on answering. I didn't know if we would be able to do it, but I don't think I'm spoiling too much by saying ultimately we were able to. And I was really happy to have been able to do that, because I just thought it was like a loose end hanging that was gnawing at me even after I published the article.
Wherever it is, yeah. But like when you were doing your research and you found out there was no dead wife or girlfriend, forget later on, didn't people want to research that crime, and find out what had happened to her, even when people believed him?
The Anonymous Collective did that, and they did an amazing job. They were able, you know, so this, by the time I came to the story, this was already established that his, you know, first wife, they had divorced at some point. I mean, she did not die a gruesome death in LA in 1976. And beyond that, he had said, you know, he had given various details about the serial killer that was supposed to have killed her. And they went and they compared, they went through every person. He said that the killer was on death row in California. And they, you know, very thoroughly kind of went through with a fine tooth comb. And none of the people who were in prison in California for these types of crimes, none of it matched up. So,
right.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Okay. I guess my last question for you would be, what is that like writing an article as a journalist and then being able to translate that to the screen? What has it been like for you?
Well, it's been a total like learning process for me, because I had never been on the screen. I mean, I've always, you know, I'm just an ink stained wretch. I'm a journalist, and I'm a print journalist, and I was a little bit apprehensive, honestly, about being on camera. But we had such a great team who really made me feel confident. And honestly, I was also just driven by curiosity. There were so many more things that I wanted to know. And, you know, I had the opportunity to, I had more support, I had a team, I had people working with me. So to get to like, keep going was just, you know, it was such an incentive.
Right. Amazing. And then you were able to actually sit down and have a conversation with him, correct?
Yes. A somewhat contentious conversation, as I think you'll see.
Oh, I can't wait. But what was it like to actually meet somebody that you've written about in the ways that you had written about him? Did you ask him if he had read your article?
I did ask. I mean, it was interesting. So when I wrote the article, I had reached out to him at the beginning of my reporting, and he responded and he said, well, you know, I said, I'm interested in writing about you. Could we meet for coffee? And he said, well, what do you want to write about? And I was very honest about what I wanted to write about. And he, you know, vaporized, and I didn't hear from him again. So I spent months reporting the piece. I mean, maybe more months than I should have. And I think I'd written most, if not all of it. And I had uncovered a lot of things about his family. There was some very personal stuff in it. And I just thought, I have really got to like pull out every last stop to give him the right to respond to this stuff, even though he had kind of disappeared over the course of months. So I found out where I thought he lived. I got on a train, I took a taxi, and I found myself standing on like, you know, a Thursday afternoon in the middle of the French countryside outside this little cottage, and I'm kind of peering in the window over the fence, and nobody seems to be home. And so I finally called him. I had a number for him, and I said, listen, I know, like you said, you didn't want to talk, but I think I'm standing outside your house and I'm going to publish this stuff, and I really want to give you an opportunity to respond to it before I do. And he said, well, actually, that's not my house. I don't live there, but I'll tell you where I do live. And if you can be there in 30 minutes, I'll talk to you. So I'm like speeding down these, you know, French country roads, and I get to his house, and he lets me in. I really didn't know what to expect. And the first thing I see when I walk in is a knife rack with knives stuck through like the forehead, the groin, and the stomach of this human figure. And I walked in like really tentatively thinking, what's going to go on here? But we had a conversation. So I published the piece. You know, I don't think it was particularly flattering one. And when we reached out about the series, he said that he hadn't read it. Mm-hmm. Yet, you know, for one reason or another, maybe just the pure love of the spotlight, maybe knowing that he might not have another opportunity to try to spin his tale again, he right. accepted, and he appears in the series. So we do have a final kind of showdown, you know, about the facts and the truth of the greater truth of the story at the end.
Right. Okay. I love it. Everybody should watch this. It's on Nat Geo August 28th and then comes out on Hulu on the 29th. What is the name of it? Killer?
Good question. It Killer Lies. Let me just
Killer
make
Lies.
Sure. Yeah,
that's it's right. Killer Lies.
Let me make sure I get the con man right part. Comment. Okay, it's Killer Lies Chasing a True Crime Con Man.
Exactly. Okay, are you working on any other articles we should look for at the New Yorker?
I had an article come out just a few weeks ago that I think would appeal to people who are interested in this. It involves an 18th century French shipwreck, gold bars, extradition, an elderly Florida couple who got caught up in it all. So if that was in the New Yorker just a couple of weeks ago, and it's called Old Money.
Oh, amazing. That sounds great. And do you think that that will be something that you put up for something that somebody buys for the big screen?
Yeah, I hope so. We're trying to cook something up. So
amazing.
To be decided, but with any luck.
Right. Yes. Well, hopefully we will have you back on to talk about that. Everybody should watch this Killer Lies. Again, on Nat Geo and Hulu. And I appreciate your time. This has been awesome.
Thanks so much, Rachel. It's been a pleasure.
Good luck to you.
Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Misunderstood.